In this episode of Movie Wireless, we talk about King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, and Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 2. It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
I'm Yusd as well.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings.
Hello.
Hello.
So we're rolling back to back. We just debated Alien Covenant for...
for some more.
Feels like half an hour.
While the podcast was off.
And then there was a postscript, actually. But... got another couple of movies here this week. They're both pretty big releases.
It's a big season. Is this pre-summer?
It's May.
Pre-summer. Right?
This is weird. All these big tentpole movies now, they're releasing them earlier and earlier. Usually it used to be like right
Memorial Day
July 4th.
Weekend.
Yeah. July 4th weekend is when it would start the summer season off officially. But I guess they realize it's too crowded then.
Yeah, I guess that means good times for us all, right? I mean, that's the thing. They're figuring out their release schedule and... yeah, I'm excited to talk about both of these movies.
Me too.
But I think before we get into it...
I have to be so poker-faced.
You know...
this last week has been the most hard, I think. Mm. Because they're three big movies, right? We saw Covenant, Guardians of the Galaxy, and King Arthur all in 1 week.
Yes.
And I really have no clue what either of you thought of them. So neither. I'm kind of excited to find out. But before we get there, we should... talk about our usual segment, which is I can't find anything to watch on Netflix. About this simply because there's tons of stuff on Netflix. It's not always easy to find, especially now that they've got rid of the 5-star rating system, which I'm sure there's...
Woo!
Well, you know what? In fairness to Netflix, I generally rated things either 5 stars or not at all. So
really?
Yeah. I realized I was not... when I went back and thought about this for a second, I thought basically I am saying I really like this. So I gave it a 4 or a 5, or I didn't bother rating it at all. So I guess that's probably their thinking. The majority of people are lazy like me, and they've gone with this binary thumbs up, thumbs down. I just wonder how it's going to affect the recommendation engine overall. So I'd be curious to see how
it is. Just thumbsed up on our account. It's going to, for the film I'm recommending, so.
Okay, so now everything's going to be to Rashmi's taste, which is part of the problem of sharing a Netflix account and profile, because Rashmi doesn't want her own queue.
Because it's more to do.
You're like, well, then I have to look through your queue.
Exactly. Exactly. Like,
maybe you don't want to look in my queue.
It's a first world problem, Joe.
Indeed. But we are here. You don't have to figure out that. You don't have to figure out any recommendation algorithm. We will tell you what to watch this week. So why don't you tell us what's in your queue?
Yeah, and you can listen to all of us and then do what I ask you to.
That's how it works, right, Yasni?
Yes.
No, we're in his house today, so he's feeling a bit kind of big for his britches.
It's true. Okay, look, I'm going to start. So my Netflix pick for this week is an interesting film that I think got lost at the end of last year during fourth quarter. It's called Sausage Party.
Yay! Oh, come on.
I like Sausage Party.
It's really fun. I'm going to read you the description. After making a gruesome discovery about life beyond the supermarket, an affable sausage strives to save his fellow foods in this raunchy comedy. And it stars, you know, Seth Rogen, Salma Hayek, Ed Norton, Kristen Wiig, Jonah Hill. It's very adult, but it's hilarious.
No, it's not.
I found this hilarious. I think I laughed for 80% of the movie. And, you know, I don't always love that kind of
raunchy
Seth Rogen. Yeah, I don't enjoy the frat boy humor as much. But this brings a bit more to the party, I think, to the sausage party. So, Sausage Party, watch it and let me know what you think.
Don't watch it. This is a movie I couldn't stand.
Yeah, Joe hated this. I don't think you watched all of it. You waited for...
I'm a big fan of... don't get me wrong. I'm a big fan of very juvenile, kind of male-oriented humor. But this movie...
but this isn't Jackass. This is smarter than Jackass.
Irritated the hell out of me.
Really?
Yeah, I felt like it was just... you know, let's use a medium that's normally for kids, like animation, and make an adult joke movie. But I didn't think it was half as clever as it thought it was. And I think I was irritated by the poster. I was irritated by the trailer, and then when the movie started, I was just, I tuned out. I was, no.
It's really funny. It's funny. It's funny.
And I mean a minority here, I know that. Okay, Sausage Party for Rashmi.
Yes, and my recommendation on Netflix is a movie which also came out last year and also got lost somewhat in the shuffle of, you know, the big movies that get released around year end for Oscar consideration. And the movie is The Queen of Katwe. Mm. And it is directed by Meera Nair, who has done, gosh, Salaam Bombay and Mississippi Masala and Monsoon Wedding and The Namesake and Kama Sutra and The Reluctant Fundamentalist. I mean, she has quite a resume, and here she is, with a movie which is set predominantly, in fact, the entire movie is set in Uganda. And it tells the story of a girl who kind of discovers herself when she realizes that she has exceptional skills as a chess player. And the movie gives, thank God, a really good, you know, opportunity for Lupita Nyong'o to kind of, you know, find a good role. I mean, she famously won, you know, Best Supporting mm-hmm. Actress for 12 Years a Slave. And since then, she'd been struggling to find a good role. And she plays this girl's mother with a lot of heart. And this is completely, in a way, your typical sports movie, rags to riches, you know, where the little kid prevails. It's based on a true story, but it's done with so much heart. And Nair really captures the feel and the smell and the dirt of the place. And you can kind of sense, you know, with the rhythm of the way people talk, you almost feel like you are there in Uganda at that time.
And oh, I so must that's, watch that.
And it's just, you know, it just fills you up. It's a feel-good movie. I would recommend it to everyone, The Queen of Katwe.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, it has an amazing cast, and I think it has a really good premise, but it's one of those that I looked at, and it didn't appeal to me. Mm. And it feels like hard work to put it on and watch it. It's because the name
doesn't give anything away.
Yeah, Queen of Katwe, yeah.
We have. I mean, I find that from time to time when I see a movie where the name simply doesn't give me anything to
information. Yeah.
So, yeah. And the poster doesn't either.
Right. You know, so I'm glad I think you recommended have
to
kind it, of yes,
know about yeah. it to know about
it's
it.
It's not bitter medicine at all. In fact, this girl is so spunky and she's always getting into trouble and it's kind of fun. And David Ayalovo, who is always so good, is here kind of helping her out as her mentor. And, you know, it has kind of heartbreaks and triumphs and it's based on a true story. So you don't, it doesn't go like a Hollywood script, so it's quite fun.
And is it similar to that other chess movie we watched with Cuba Gooding Jr.? Remember?
Life of a King.
Life of a King. God.
I think it's better than that.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. But I mean, not that I did not like Life of a King, but this is quite exceptional.
Okay.
I thought you were going to talk about the...
Oh, the one with Tobey Maguire.
Correct, yeah.
No.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah. What was
the
that one?
The one with the... Tobey yeah. Maguire and
Liev Schreiber.
Yeah,
yeah. So we saw. Yeah, we. I think we all liked it. We saw it last year.
Yep.
And it was based on what's his name, Bobby Fischer.
Correct.
That's right. Yeah.
It's based on Bobby Fischer.
Had the Cold War kind of undertones. War, yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, so my recommendation is Queen of Katwe. Joe, what's your recommendation?
So Rashmi, can you add Queen of Katwe to our
yes,
queue?
Yes, I will.
Thank you.
Our queue.
The profile name is Joe, by the way, just for the record here. My pick is a movie called The Place Beyond the Pines.
Yes!
Gross.
I know. This is a movie by writer-director Derek Cian France. I hope I'm saying that right. He also directed Blue Valentine and also last year's The Light Between the Oceans, which I know, Rashmi, caused you to stick your fingers down your throat and throw up your stomach contents for the next week or so, I think.
Even though it had Fassbender in it.
The Place Beyond the Pines stars Ryan Gosling, who seems to be a kind of a muse of Cian France here. Mm-hmm. He was in Blue Valentine as well. And the synopsis is basically a motorcycle stunt rider turns to robbing banks as a way to provide for his lover and their newborn child, a decision that puts him on a collision course with an ambitious rookie cop navigating a department led by a corrupt detective. None of that really tells you what this movie is. This is a long kind of sweeping melodrama. It comes in several acts, and the movie changes tone, shifts, major tonal shift from kind of act to act. But I love this movie. I think it has its detractors, and I understand that. I think, Rashmi, you're not the biggest fan of it. But I loved it for how it was constantly surprising me. It's a long movie. It feels longer in the sense of, I felt like this was like multiple movies, and it really, you know, it really captured me. So, I mean, Yazdi, you gave this a rip-roaring yes.
I love this movie, and I'm more than anything else, I just love the structure of the movie. Like you said, it is episodic, but it's also epic, and it kind of almost picks a certain portion in the lives of different generations. And the movie kind of lulls you into believing it's only about the Ryan Gosling character, but it's not. And it's about, you know, other characters. And it's very ingenious in how it just completely at one point just shifts focus and says, okay, I'm not interested in these people anymore. Now you're going to, you know, in the second part, you're going to see this actor. And I think that kind of caused a whiplash for a lot of people who didn't care for it. And the third act is actually about the next generation. And so I think more than anything else, it speaks to how we all kind of pay for the sins of our fathers. Mm. And, you know, it's...
I was just going to say that. I mean, the one redeeming feature, I think, now that I think back about it, is it truly is what the consequences of anyone's behavior on future generations.
Yeah.
And Bradley Cooper is in this, and Rose Byrne is in this.
Ray Liotta, Ava Mendez.
Mahershala Ali, who won Best Supporting Actor for Moonlight, he was in this. Emery Cohen, remember, who we all loved in Brooklyn?
Yes.
He plays one of the sons. So it's a very ambitious movie.
Yeah, no, terrific.
Lovely.
Interestingly, for me at least, the music is actually credited to Mike Patton, who is a singer-songwriter from my favorite group back in the 80s and 90s, which is Faith No More, which is kind of bizarre. I didn't realize that little tidbit was there until I was writing the Wikipedia page here. So again, maybe another reason that I like the movie. So we have Place Beyond the Pines. Rashmi, your pick was...
Sausage Party.
And Yazdi.
Queen of Katwe.
So again, three amazing movies.
Mine is clearly the most cerebral of the group.
Yes, the most philosophical.
Yes.
But it's amazing that this stuff for your, you know, $9.99 a month or whatever your Netflix costs. I mean, these are movies that we were recently in theaters. Yep. I mean, this is kind of amazing stuff. What a great time to be a movie fan. So don't complain that you can't find anything to watch on Netflix. Listen to Movie Wallows. That's all you need. Yes. Moving on, so we have to talk about King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, and we also have to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Where should we start?
You choose. I'm excited about both.
Let's start with King Arthur then.
Okay, that would have been my pick.
So King Arthur, Legend of the Sword is directed by Guy Ritchie, and Guy Ritchie obviously very famously burst upon the scene with Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, followed subsequently by Snatch. Both of which movies I didn't understand more than 5% because I didn't know what the heck they were saying. But they were very, very loved by everyone. And he subsequently swept away that Misbegotten movie with Madonna.
Oops.
Remember? But then
I think they were newly married. It must have been a gift.
Yeah. And then, I will make a great movie for you.
Yeah.
And then he made the very, very popular reimagining of the Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law. And then last year, he just made one of the best movies of last year, which was The Man from U.N.C.L.E., a movie that deserves to be seen and appreciated and admired way more than it was. And this year, Ritchie is here taking on a historical movie set in the land of Camelot. And it is The Legend of King Arthur. And what is there? We all know the story of Camelot, but for what it's worth, robbed of his birthright, Arthur comes up the hard way in the back alleys of the city of Londinium. But once he pulls the sword from the stone, he's forced to acknowledge his true legacy, whether he likes it or not.
I like the action when you pull your sword.
I pulled the sword out.
Yeah, he pulled your imaginary sword out of yours.
Yes. We should start doing video podcasts.
We should.
My God, that was so animated.
It was. The screenplay writing credits are Guy Ritchie, Joby Harold, and Lionel Vigram. And then the cast is Charlie Hunnam plays Arthur, Astrid Bergers Frisbee, who is in a great movie on Netflix called Angels of Sex. You guys must watch it.
Oh.
It's brilliant. It's really good. It's a Spanish movie. But anyway, I digress. She plays the sorceress in this movie. Jude Law plays Vortigern, the evil villain in this movie. And then the cast is rounded out by Jimon Hounsou and Eric Bana, amongst others. So I think this is his first, Guy Ritchie's first take in historical fiction. How did he fare, guys?
Well, unless you call
Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, yeah, Sherlock Holmes too. That's
okay, so,
but that's fictional. Also, is this.
Right? I'm going to predict that the two of you hated it, but let's find out.
So Guy Ritchie, as you stated, Yazdi, has made some of my favorite movies ever, which includes Snatch. And of course, most recently, you mentioned it, Man from U.N.C.L.E. And even the Sherlock Holmes series, you know, I really, really enjoyed. And we came to that party late. Especially for the last two I mentioned, the Man from U.N.C.L.E. and Sherlock Holmes, I think he has a very clever way of modernizing older stories and making them fun and relevant whilst maintaining their integrity and authenticity. Unfortunately, this time his working class charm just didn't work. And what we got was a tonally confused, hyper-colloquial bit of a mess, really. I wanted to love this. And overall, I'm really disappointed because this is Game of Thrones meets Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. Both of which I love, by the way, but just not in the same movie.
Yazdi?
No, you go next. Oh, sure. Introduced it.
he gets the final prize. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, I agree with everything you said there, Rashmi. I think this movie is a bit of a mess. But that said, I think Guy Ritchie could direct a dog food commercial and I'd find it entertaining. And I think, you know, is it a classic work here? No. I think there is a huge misstep here in giving the Knights of the Round Table this kind of Cockney charm. I think it doesn't quite work when you go further back than the time of Sherlock Holmes, because one doesn't tend to think of the Knights of the Round Table and these noblemen and so as, you know, having that all right geezer kind of London attitude. And that's what this movie...
Hey, I'm born in Londinium.
But that's... Right. It doesn't even sound like London, does it? You know, it's got a, you know, Londinium. Who's going to say that? It doesn't work. And I think that way to
we
bring...
We pronounce it Londinium.
But that would work, right? I mean, I think that's the thing. That's exactly the problem that it's had. So, I mean, if it wasn't for that simple decision, I think this movie would be doing a lot better. I mean, I think it is genuinely entertaining. I think... some of the action set pieces work really well. I mean, you know, but I think it's one of those things that it doesn't work right from the get-go, and your brain refuses to accept that this is anything other than a few blokes larking around on a movie set. Yazdi, what did you think?
How can you say that when there's giant snakes and, you know, giant elephants, like you know, 600 times size elephants and snakes which are bigger than your house? That's not
I think
good.
You just summed up the movie.
You know, that snake was bigger than a house. Did
was,
you see it?
It
can you imagine a snake slithering through like it? Like barely entering through your door, the whole snake. Like,
there's a bit of witchcraft in it.
Look, the whole movie is horribly anachronistic, right? It's like, it's like, you know, people are using gestures and people are saying chop, chop. I don't think anybody during Camelot said chop, chop now. You know, so it's, and you know, people are wearing leather and velvet and
jeans, I think.
Yeah.
But having said all that, I enjoyed this movie so much. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. And I, you know, I was almost enjoying how anachronistic it was at every step. And then I kind of had fun with it. And it almost didn't even matter to me that it was, you know, The Legend of King Arthur. It almost felt like, you know, like you said, Game of Thrones, or, you know, a little bit of The Hobbit. And there were, you know, these snakes. And, you know... truth be told, I mean, Jude Law doesn't get his due. He's a very fine actor and he's so menacing and so...
He had so much fun
here. He had so much fun playing the bad guy.
But he has to say, and you'll probably have to beep this out, it's jarring to have Jude Law, who's this fantastical king, say, do your fucking job. No!
But that's not right. No. I think people said fucking back then, but I think the issue is...
I don't think so.
No?
No. I'm born in Londinium. I know.
I'm sure people were saying the F word when you were born. But the F word goes back quite a lot. But anyway, I think it's clever that, you know, a PG-13 movie allows you one F word. And if you say it twice, then it immediately becomes an R-rated movie. So he said, okay, I'm going to get my one chance to use the F-word. And
Jude Law gets to use it.
Use it. Yeah. I did think he was channeling the evil queen from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
I did too. Yeah, I did too. I mean, there are some things. I don't know if you've finished, Jessica, but we're jumping on anyway.
I loved it.
Look, I think there were some things that, of course, I love Guy Ritchie. I love the directorial signatures, is what I call them.
Yeah.
You know, the slowing down and the speeding up of the film.
The montages. There's
funny, yeah, the montages, the funny parts, the cheeky humor. It's epic in scale. I admire what he's trying to do. I like that he's bringing this old story to life because he's done it so well in the past. But these are revered and old medieval stories that should be treated with a bit more care. Sure. This is legendary, and unfortunately, it came off a little larky. Joe, you said it, and disrespectful to the place this character plays in history, albeit perhaps made up. Right? I mean, we don't. Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, these are legendary stories, and I just feel that it came off a little bit disrespectful to me.
Fair enough.
Do you think that explains the bad reviews? Because I think otherwise I thought the movie was well executed. I think other than that kind of jarring tonal miscalculation, I think if it wasn't for kind of accents and attitude, I thought the movie was very grand in its scale, and mm-hmm. I think you know, it was swashbuckling is not the right word, but it had the heroism in it that one expects from this story.
Yeah, I mean, I think swashbuckling is a good word. I mean, I think it's more disposable. I think it needed to be less disposable, and then it would have probably got better reviews.
Disposable in what sense?
In the sense of like Pirates of the Caribbean number 5.
No, really?
Right? Yeah, I feel like there is no way I will ever want to watch this movie again, and I love Guy Ritchie. So I think it's, I don't know if it's a problem in miscasting, if it's just the tonal aspects, but something didn't work. I think it didn't have enough emotional depth, maybe. I think the hero's journey.
I think the script is good. I think the dialogue is poor.
Yeah, the hero's journey maybe just wasn't as difficult. It came together fairly easily, I think, for Arthur.
Yeah, fair enough. I won't...
What did you guys think of the 3D?
Inconsequential.
Yeah.
I mean, they did
save the money. Yeah. I think it's a conversion. It didn't feel like it was shot in 3D. I didn't think they used it well enough. But you know, probably last ditch attempt by a studio to what they, you know, the problem with Rotten Tomatoes these days is that if it's less than, you know, 60%, it's basically the kiss of death, I think, in the box office for many movies. And I think that's going to be the case here, at least in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best use of 3D was when they had the logos for the companies which financed the movie, which came up.
Remember? Yeah, that's true.
At the very start, they pop right into your eyes.
Right.
I move my head back. I'm like, oh, wow, the giant W is going to attack me and eat me up. So that was the best use. But then
and the snake in the house didn't excite you?
I love the snake. And that snake was as big as a house, guys. I love that's the stuff of nightmares. And those elephants big as mountains.
Yeah, that was just silly, though.
You know,
we've seen those in Game of Thrones. Do you watch Game of Thrones?
No.
Oh, see, okay.
Was that Kathy Bates, by the way, in the pool under the castle?
I don't know. No, I think it was the one who usually comes in Harry Enfield. I can't remember her name. I'll find her name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
Even that was kind of...
Well, that's who I'm thinking of, but what's her name?
It is Kathy something. But I'll find it.
I think that was kind of clever where, you know, he got his power from with this, you know, this creature, you know, with the three women with eels. And it was all quite... Look, I didn't find a single moment of the movie lazy.
No.
Okay, it's very energized, and like you said, he uses he used a lot of it in the Sherlock movies, but he uses it here again, where somebody will be telling like, "We're going to go and rob this bank," and you know, you do this and you do that, and while he's narrating it, you actually see it happening,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So you get a sense of how they had planned it and how it actually happened. He uses it a little one too many times in it, but it's still kind of a nice little touch.
It's cheeky.
It's a signature directorial trait, right? I mean, this is what he does better than anyone else. And it's always very original when he does it. I mean, I don't know that anyone else tries to do this anymore. Maybe Tarantino has maybe used that device once or twice.
Yeah.
But
and then there is a piece towards the end. And I like that all great heroes' journeys kind of get to this place, you know. The Lord of the Rings gets to this place where at one point, he just realizes the ring is not worth it. It just causes too much trouble. And he just says, I'm going to get rid of the ring. In this case, he reaches the same conclusion with the sword. And he says, that's it. The sword is not worth, you know, the trouble. And he throws the sword into the ocean. And then through a series of events, he kind of recognizes his true responsibility. And mm-hmm. it's all done by montage.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that piece kind of effective. Now, yeah. I granted, it does seem like somebody doing a, you know, a stage show version of a very, very revered classic and saying, wouldn't it be fun if, you know, I wore a velvet jacket, you know, wouldn't I, if it was all leather or whatever. So it takes a little too many liberties with the material. And I agree it's disrespectful, but I had a blast with it. I really, yeah, I can't lie.
Look, it's entertaining in the moment. But, you know, even David Beckham's in here.
Yes.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
Yeah, and he's playing David Beckham.
He's playing David.
Yeah.
He's playing David Beckham.
Yeah.
Is he really?
You're going to pull that sword, are we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was waiting for a soccer ball to like make its way in the scene somehow. I mean, it's too larkish.
It's, you know, I listen to Komodo and Mayo, mm-hmm. Their podcast, and one of the things that Mark Komodo always says is, the more fun the cast seems to be having, the less fun the audience will ultimately have. And I think this is one of those instances where, you know, particularly in that scene, you can see that they're all kind of mucking around a little bit, right? You know, let's play this for laughs. Let's play this. But it is one of those cases where I think hubris, perhaps, in trying to modernize his tale in the way that he did Sherlock Holmes. I think it fit very well with the 19th century London that the Sherlock Holmes universe had. But here it maybe didn't work so much. And those kind of jokes and that modern day kind of London attitude. Because, you know, London is a spiky Careful. Bunch. Cockney Londoners are a spiky bunch. And I think that's, you know, it's a gangland mentality as opposed to, you know, the knights and noblemen that we expect from this story.
Right, right. Maybe, yeah, there you go. I think that's a nice way to put it. And yes, Jan, I mean, in terms of how epic it was, I agree with you. It didn't feel lazy, but it felt phoned in for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And maybe that's just the reflection of how larkish and lighthearted it is and how disposable it feels. But anyway, I'm ready to
go for it.
Sum this one up. So look, I like the theme of you are who you are born to be and the battle of self, because I think the battle with yourself is usually the biggest battle anyone has to face. So I did like that. But had this been made in an era where Game of Thrones wasn't around, I probably would have rated this more highly, despite all of the problems that it had. But unfortunately, it feels phoned in for me. And I think this sword can definitely go back in the cupboard and be locked away and hopefully never be seen again.
Ouch.
That sounded very sexual.
As you like animated getting yours out, your sword. 6 out of 10.
It's just getting worse, right?
I know. 6 out of 10 from me.
Okay. Look, I mean, like I said before, this is very anachronistic. Somebody actually wears a hoodie at one time.
Yeah.
You know, somebody had a hoodie on. But I enjoyed the life out of this. And, you know, it's nowhere close to being a faithful adaptation of, you know, the story of King Arthur and the, you know, Table of Knights and Camelot and all of that. But what it is so much fun. And I found it, I think you take a good director and no matter what environment you put him in, he cannot not have fun with it. You know, I don't think he's being particularly lazy, or maybe he was incorrect in choosing too light of a tone to carry this material. But Charlie Hunnam is great. It's a lot of fun. And I really love the snake as big as a house and the elephants, which were as big as mountains. I love that stuff. I love that snake. So anyway, I would give it a 7.5 out of 10, and I would ordinarily back it down to a 7. But because this movie has been so pooped on, you know, by everybody, I'm going to bump my 7.5 up to 8.
Oh my God.
Yep.
Yes. So you're giving this the same score as Covenant.
Well, Covenant was an 8.5, which came down to an 8. This is 7.5, which got promoted to an 8.
But they're both 8s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Rashmi, there's a world of difference between 7.5 and 8.5. Let's just...
Fair enough, fair enough.
And I'm going to fall squarely between you two. I'm going to give this a 7 out of 10 because there wasn't a moment in this movie when I wasn't gleefully enjoying every kind of moment that the movie had to offer me. I think Jude Law was having a whale of a time with the character. I loved the lead, Charlie Hunnam. I think he did a really nice job. I just feel like that all the stuff we've spoken about let the movie down in ways that I think the world has blasted it for, and I don't think that's fair. I think it's just shy of the mark, you know, a couple of tweaks here and there, and I think this could have been as well received at least as the Sherlock Holmes series.
Agreed.
So,
agreed.
7 out of 10 for me. And I think I could see myself happily watching this again. I mean, it's so much fun. It's and again, there's real danger at times. I mean, it's entertaining. It's what I want of an action movie.
You know what would have only made this worse though, if Jason Statham was around. Like, I mean, I wonder if he was almost brought in and then they replaced him with David Beckham.
For that
would have been better, yes.
All right, let's move on. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Okay, so set to the backdrop of awesome mixtape number 2, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 continues the team's adventures as they unravel the mystery of Peter Quill's true parentage. So this is directed by James Gunn, who also did the original, and written by James Gunn. And then there's, you know, obviously the original, which is the Marvel comic. And then each character has its own writer, apparently. And Stan Lee also helped to write Groot, apparently. Okay. Oh. So anyway.
I am Groot. That was difficult.
Yeah. cast includes Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, Vin Diesel, Bradley Cooper, Michael Rooker, all from the original, including Karen Gillan, Pom, a whole ton of people. Sylvester Stallone, Kurt Russell, Elizabeth Debicki, Chris Sullivan, Sean Gunn, Tommy Flanagan, many, many, many more. This has a huge cast of henchmen. So, Guardians of the Galaxy. Joe, why don't you start us off? Volume 2.
So I think this being my second date with the Guardians of the Galaxies, this is really a classic case of it's not you, it's me. This just isn't my flavor of superhero movies. I had the same, remember with Guardians 1?
You were the hater.
Yeah, I don't know what's wrong because I think it has all the right ingredients. Right, that's what I'm saying. This is a classic case of, you know, it's not you, it's me. You know, and if I was on a date with Guardians, I would have been asking for check, please, within the first 10 minutes. I just don't get on with this particular franchise. I think as fun and as good looking as these movies are, they just kind of completely fail to kind of stir what it is within me as a movie watcher that I enjoy. I was literally bored to tears from about the halfway point and couldn't wait for it to end. And that really is completely the opposite of, I think, everyone else in the world, because this movie franchise seems to work really well. But I was just bored. I didn't find the jokes funny. I just thought the whole thing was a bit of a, you know, I'm reading my comments from the first. Very well executed. Doesn't bring anything new to the tables. I just, it's just not for me. So didn't like it at all.
Moving on swiftly.
Yeah.
For me, I think this is what comic books should be. I think they should be fun and they should be goofy and they should be silly and they should be heartfelt instead of being, you know, lumbering and, you know, deep and burdened by how we live today. Remind you of a certain director. but we won't go there. So I love the first movie because it just seems so cheeky and fun. And this movie is a notch below the first one. And I don't know if it's just a question of, you know,
expectations.
The first time we hadn't seen this before.
Came out of nowhere.
And this time around, we know all the characters and so forth. It's a delight to watch. Visually, it's really fun. It's great to see the interactions between, they are a family, let's face it, you know, with all their problems and so forth. And having said that, you know, I think the movie does not suffer from a sophomore slump. I mean, usually the second movie in a series is very difficult to make because you got to do it twice as well, you know.
To be half as good.
So I think by those measures, the movie is quite successful. I think a little bit gets lost in its desire for spectacle over humor, and it kind of tips over a little bit too much into spectacle. And I think, you know, the last half hour of the movie was just too much things blowing up and I got a little bored. But outside of that, what a fun time.
Exactly what Yazdi said, literally. So, I mean, look, Guardians of the Galaxy was such a surprising hit for Marvel. They actually pegged it as being one of the worst movies within the Marvel universe. Is apparently really? The, yeah, was what they had said before it came out. So I think having been such a big hit, I think the weight of expectations was on the second installment. And although, like you said, Yazdi, this isn't the great surprise that the first one was, this is not disappointing by any means. Mm-hmm. I mean, the opening titles and sequence are enough reason to go and watch this movie.
So much fun.
I just found this really enjoyable. And, you know, I think this has a great message about what it means to be family and who we are versus where we come from. And I think it has a real heart and emotional depth that's hiding under a silly caper of people dressed up in strange costumes.
Mm-hmm. Whereas I think, yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, I feel like it is just a silly caper with people in costumes. I mean, one of my main issues with the first movie is that the Guardian, you know, they're called Guardians of the Galaxy, like they're here to save the day. I didn't think like anything needed saving. And I felt the same way here too, right? What are they guarding? I mean, that just doesn't
seem... The galaxy.
And it's so just, big.
But it never feels like it's in danger, right?
It totally is.
I mean, it just...
Black holes, enemies... Yeah. Engineers from Prometheus.
gold people who mean harm.
And ride on cycles.
I don't remember any of that stuff.
You don't remember gold people meaning harm?
No.
The Queen?
I'm so bored.
Elizabeth Debicki?
Yes.
Seriously.
She was so good.
I think I was thinking about Breakfast Tomorrow by that point in the movie. And I don't like breakfast, right? So this is kind of how bored I was. You know, I think, I feel like, what should work here is that we should have Avengers works. Why does Avengers works? I think Avengers works because each character has its own particular arc. They have, there's push and pull between all of them here. But here it just felt like they're kind of a band of ragtag, which they're meant to be. But I don't particularly feel like they care for each other very much. And as a consequence, I don't feel like I care for them because they don't seem to be worried too much about each other. So I think, as a band of heroes.
Yeah, sorry, not to interrupt, but I think that's the crux of this movie, right? So in Guardians of the Galaxy, they come together, right? Mm-hmm. They're brought together. They don't want to be together, but they end up being together and they end up being more powerful as a group than they are separately. Okay. And I think in this one, we are exploring what it means to care for each other and not realizing that you have become so dependent upon each other and that, you know, you're not just brought together now, but you actually need each other and want to be with each other. So that, I think, is actually the crux of this movie, which is completely lost on you, Joe.
Humbug. And clearly, the soundtrack, which... In the first movie was 80s themed. I think here we go back a decade and get kind of more of a 70s thing. Again, it's all particular. This kind of weird nostalgia that it has for Walkmans and mixtapes. I mean, to hell with that.
Why is he so Scroogey?
I know. It's really bah humbug.
Because I feel like this, it's all gimmickry. It's all gimmickry, and I think maybe it's more cool to millennials who grew up without cassette tapes, but I think they sucked. And I'm really glad that we have pristine AAC-encoded MP3 players and iPods because, again, this movie just seems to kind of latch onto that as something cool. And the damn Walkman from the first movie, you can't buy on eBay now for like less than $8,000. That particular model of Walkman, because of this movie, has now like... It's spiked in value. I'm like, this is the kind of thing that irritates me. I think it just feels like, you know.
Oh my God, look how animated Joe's getting, Yazdi.
I am grumpy.
Yes, yeah, you are. We will call that.
In fact, that's all I'm going to say for the rest of this review. I am grumpy.
Yes. Look, I mean, for me, I think I was worried at the beginning because there's a lot of different strings of story thrown at you. And it literally, you jump from scene to scene. For about the first five scenes, we're getting a different string of the story coming out, you know, I was thinking, my God, how is this going to come together? But I was really happy to see it all comes together. And I think the thing it has going for me is it's imaginative and creative and unashamedly sweet and funny without feeling burdened by what came before it, even though I can imagine that the weight of expectation, like I said at the start, is on it. So I think it has a lot to live up to, and it's never lazy. So for me, as the this one isn't phoned in at all, which is what I was saying about King Arthur. This one for me works really hard to entertain.
Yeah, and I think this kind of stuff is hard to do. I mean, I think, you know, the whole, you know, Star-Lord character, you know, who is kind of too smart for his own good, but, you know, he gets shit done, you know, and then this whole thing between Star-Lord and Gamora, will they or won't they?
Right.
They kind of work on that. And then, you know, we get to know a little bit more about Drax, you know, and then there is a couple new characters. There's Mantis here. You know, who is a new addition, and she's kind of
she's so cute.
She's kind of dumb.
She's adorable.
Yeah. You know? And then who doesn't love Groot? And you know, Rocket is amazing. It's very hard to be like,
I agree,
smart assy. And then, you know, I don't know if it's the way Bradley Cooper voices it, because it doesn't ever sound like Bradley Cooper. It didn't in the first movie. It doesn't.
Oh, it does
either.
To me a little bit.
But that whole smart. Smart assness, it just works. So I don't know. I mean, I wanted more of the family and all that stuff, and you know, it just got lost. And then, you know, Kurt Russell plays the father.
So well cast.
He was very well cast. So I mean, it's a throwaway. It's a lark, but it's made a ton of money.
Yeah, and I think again, like I was just thinking about the Kurt Russell character. I mean, to me, in a sense, I hope this isn't a spoiler. He's almost like the engineers in Prometheus, and you can blank that out, Joe, if you think it is a spoiler. But I think it manages to ask those big existential questions without getting bogged down under its own weight. Like, it manages to ask that and be sincere about it, and yet somehow manages to keep it within the story, which I really enjoyed. And I think the other thing which I really like is I love the game of Groot, which rather like R2-D2, only those in the universe can understand. Because it would be easy. It would be an easy choice to just give him speech and give him a voice. But the I Am Groot just works really, really well for me. It's just such a good game.
I am Grumpy.
Okay, let's wind this one up. So, Joe, why don't you start? And I think I know what you're going to say.
I am Grumpy.
And score.
I am Grumpy.
Okay,
yes, Steve.
It's just
yes,
not
Steve.
Funny. Yes, it's Steve. Like, okay, I'll give it a score.
As we're rolling off our chairs, I think it's hilarious.
A Grumpy 4 out of 10. I was literally bored out of my mind in this one. It was worse than the first time round. And the first time round, I gave it a 7 out of 10, I think, because I saw what other people might like in it. But here I struggle. There's something that's just not on my wavelength here. Yeah. I am Grumpy.
Oh my goodness, look at that body language. I have to go home with that.
A slight no, don't mention Guardians of the Galaxy. Talk about Dunkirk.
Volume 2.
Stick to
yes,
Dunkirk.
Stick to Dunkirk and Prometheus.
A slightly anemic 7 out of 10 for me, because I remember I'd given an 8 out of 10 for the first one, and I think this is a little bit short of that. But again, saying the same thing as I did before, it's very difficult to do a good sequel. And I was just so happy to see all of those characters back again, Groot and Rocket and Drax and Gamora and Star-Lord and so forth.
And I loved Mantis. She was so cute.
And Mantis, yes. So, kind of undeserved 7 out of 10. But, you know, the movie's made a ton of money. It doesn't need an extra point from me. Psh, be happy with it. 7 out of 10.
I'm going to agree with your 7 out of 10. I would say fun. Obviously not as amazing as the first, but a very decent sequel. And I can't wait for the next one. These Guardians can guard my galaxy anytime.
Okay. Okay. Very good.
We're done.
Good, because I'm done talking about it. So mail at movierollers.com, twitter.com/movierollers, facebook.com/movierollers. Let us know what you think of these movies, think of our podcasts. Until I guess our next episode is Too Many Movies, Too Little Time. Hey, goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.